The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
The amount of people looking for Andy Moore around Positano, it was all the rage. They're asking him what he's got to do next. When's the next episode out? The Football Pod's gone international.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The News Round on Off the Ball
with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're welcome along. So coming up this evening, it seems that Championship and Premier League grounds are moving towards safe standing from January 1st. So this season, which is, well, I guess it's been coming, but it's interesting nonetheless. So we'll chat to Tony Evans at 7:30. Wednesday Night Rugby, we are back up and running with the United Rugby Championship. Plus, the Rugby Championship has seen Australia beat South Africa a couple of times as well, very impressively. So Matt Williams with us after 8 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts. Football show from 9, Dan McDonald in studio. League Cup games aplenty this evening. Manchester United in action against West Ham once again. And then Sinead Bradbury with us as well. She's a nutritionist, works with the Galway men's footballers, amongst others. Will give us the lowdown on the very latest do's and don'ts for elite sports people when it comes to their diet. Paul O'Connell was in talking about it recently, very interestingly, on OTBAM, so we thought we'd do a follow-up chat with Sinead. 53106, the text number. We're at Off The Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, hello.
Hey, Joe.
And Ronan Mullen, hello.
Hi, Joe.
So, lots going on. League Cup this evening, Ro. I don't know, were you keeping an eye on the League Cup last night? Caoimhín Kelleher doing his thing.
Yeah, well, the main thing is Man United against West Ham again, Joe. This is like when the clamour around Ted, when Ted the movie came out, they already commissioned the sequel before the first one even came out. And this is, we were so enraptured by the end of that West Ham Man United game that they said, let's have it again. I don't know if the teams are quite on par with what we saw the other day, but I don't mind the League Cup. I think the FA Cup could learn a lot of lessons from the format in terms of midweek. It doesn't interrupt the flow. I know you can understand this more than most, Joe, those non-Premier League weekends when the FA Cup rolls around and there's about 67 hours of radio to fill. But no, I think the League Cup does. I do like to see the sort of young players coming through, and no more so than Kelleher, who you mentioned, and his Rabona penalty save. I don't know if you saw the technique he used. It was almost as if he caught the trajectory of the ball while he was on his way down and managed to manoeuvre his other foot back up to scoop the ball away, and turned out to be a critical penalty save in the match, as that could have levelled it. So Liverpool once again putting Norwich to the sword, and it was actually a bit of fallout from that penalty. I think Adam Ida was the designated penalty taker, and Solis, their new recruit from the summer, stepped up and said, no, I'm taking this, which leads me to question how that exact thing keeps happening where designated penalty takers get overruled. Surely the manager makes that abundantly clear, like, you know, you're taking the penalties, under no circumstances is anyone else allowed to do it. So yeah, a lot of, for another routine win for Liverpool over Norwich, there was a little bit of fallout from it.
Just the 11 changes for Manchester United for their League Cup game this evening. So it's not quite a sequel. Jesse Lingard does start. Anthony Martial leads the line. Jadon Sancho plays. Juan Mata. Matic is in there. Donny van de Beek. And then a back four of Dalot, Lindelof, Bailly and Alex Telles. Dean Henderson's in goal. So that's one of the 11s for this evening. Kicks off at 7:45. Tony Evans, Rich, coming up 7:30. So Premier League Championship clubs will be able, obviously they don't have to if they don't want to, but they will be able to offer licensed standing areas from January 1st as part of a pilot program. Been a long time coming. Effectively a blanket ban on all standing since the Taylor report. There have been a number of trials over the last year or so, everywhere from Celtic Park to Shrewsbury Town. A very simple mechanism, really. Your seats are locked, there's rails behind and in front, you still have a ticket number, you have your spot. It's not like the capacity is suddenly going to jump, and I would think increasingly the arguments against don't really stack up. And you know, interestingly, it's an emotive issue, obviously, and there's a general assumption on Merseyside that they're not too keen to have a return to standing. But there was a survey last year, the Spirit of Shankly Supporters Union, 88% in favour of some kind of safe standing back. And we're talking maybe, what, 5% of a ground? Tony Evans, in a piece he wrote a while back, estimated the demand might only be from about 5% of a crowd to have standing. Because at the moment, you watch a lot of games and you do see I suppose it's unauthorised standing. A lot of stewards have given up trying to have fans sit down in certain instances. And then goal celebrations, like, there is a bit of anarchy at times. People are jumping all over each other and in seats in front of them. So maybe some rails actually isn't the worst thing in certain parts.
Yeah, the issue is it was always going to come down to ticketing, because ultimately that was the problem that that led to several instances, not just Hillsborough obviously being the most high profile case, but in terms of like crushes and all that kind of stuff, was just people going into areas that they mightn't necessarily have been ticketed for, being funneled down into areas that they didn't have a ticket for by the stewards. So it's a positive step, to be honest. Like, and as you say, it's not going to be full swathes of a ground, it's going to be certain portions, because the demographic of people going to football, because of the changes brought about by the Taylor Report 30 years ago, has changed like fundamentally. There are so many more families, there are so many more women going to matches, and they wouldn't want to see their match day experience now uprooted and taken to a fully standing event, because, you know, it wouldn't suit kids, let's be quite honest about it. This is going to be something for mainly adults, or at least older teens and stuff like that. So it'll all add to the atmosphere. I think everywhere that they've been introduced has been positive. I think Germany has probably led the way in this. I mean, you just have to look at the stadiums that they've had, mostly built for the 06 World Cup. A lot of them have had safe standing areas, and it's, you know, worth to treat the atmospheres in the Bundesliga and Bundesliga 2 are without compare across Europe. So if they can bring at least a bit of that to the English game, then fantastic, all for it. And it being introduced as soon as January as well is really good. There's a couple of caveats to it. I think it has to be available for home and away fans, that they have to have the facilities in place, and they have to have an application made for this to go ahead by October 6th. So obviously not everybody's going to have it that is available to have it in January. But a substantial amount of Premier League clubs will, and I think it'll make a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, I think Chelsea already have the railings in, actually. So
yeah, Chelsea,
ready to go.
City, I think Spurs definitely do, obviously, because their ground is like 5 minutes old, and somebody else as well. But yeah, the likes of Wolves do, I think, have sections in there, Molineux, but they don't have an away section that's allowable for it. So They might find themselves left behind. And then you do have the emotive and rather raw issue of Anfield and the new Everton ground, because that's going to have to be built now with this in mind too. Because this is something at Bramley Moor Dock that's going to come into play.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about this as if it's some completely new horizon, Ronan. They're standing already, obviously, happening every week for the last number of decades in League One and League Two in English football, and it happens, and there's no great issue at all. So I guess it's coming. Would you be inclined and attracted to go for standing section if you were heading over to a Premier League game?
No, it's an interesting point you make, that often you'll see in the away sections that they stand regardless. Like, the stewards are, to a point, they're just hapless to control that many people. So the only away ground or only away section I've been in the Premier League was actually Stamford Bridge. And as the goals were flying in, you're getting this sort of aching pain in your knee as people, or your shin rather, as people are like bowling forward from behind, and you're banging your legs against where you should be sitting. So that's kind of, if they can do it with that issue, I think it's kind of common sense that if people are going to stand, you may as well facilitate them, because I'm sure issues do happen in there that probably aren't reported. Like, I'm sure there are injuries, but yeah, I think it's probably logical. And I know there's been some clamour from certain quarters. I think Andy Mitten has spoken about it on the show in the past, that sort of Manchester United have been to the forefront in trying to bring it in. So yeah, I think it's good progress, actually.
Okay, well, we'll talk to Tony Evans this hour. Matt Williams after 8 o'clock. Any questions around elite athlete nutrition that you might have, fire them in, or even your own, feel free to give us any questions you might have. So Sinead Bradbury, nutritionist with the Galway men's footballer, is going to give us the lowdown on the latest do's and don'ts for elite sports people. Paul O'Connell was in recently talking about just the mad changes across the course of his career, so we thought we'd do a follow-up piece. So that's on the way, maybe around 8:40 or so. I'm presuming the days of just get as many carbs into you as possible, lots of pasta, or maybe a bit outdated, I think, at this stage. So that is on the way. Dan McDonald after 9 o'clock. We'll kick off the news round as ever. It is with thanks to Gillette. Richie, we're starting where? Ryder Cup, I think you have first.
Yeah, it's Christmas Eve, Joe, in terms of Ryder Cup preparations, and Shane Lowry insists he'll have a big part to play in this week's tournament. The Offaly golfer, of course, making his tournament debut in Wisconsin, having been named as one of Padraig Harrington's captain's picks, and Lowry is determined to make the most of his opportunity.
I'm pretty happy with the conditions here, to be honest. I'm pretty happy with the golf course and that cold wind. It feels very much like a summer's day in Ireland when you're out there. You know, it's... it's quite difficult to play in these conditions because you need to get your head around hitting a 6-iron 150 yards as opposed to, you know, normally most guys hit their 6-iron over 200 yards. So it's just little things like I feel, you know, might help me this week or conditions and, you know, stuff like that. But, yeah, how do you go with coping with it? It's just sometimes it's hard to practice for that. You just kind of need to know how to do it. And I feel like I know how to do it. So I'm very excited to get out there competing and, you know, hopefully winning some points.
It's an amazing course, by the way. It's going to be a fantastic Ryder Cup. It really is an extraordinary course. Just looking at the various practice groupings, so that does come with a health warning and no better man than Padraig Harrington to mix things up and confuse us all. But it would appear, I think, that we could have the tasty pairing from Shane Lowry's perspective of Shane Lowry with the best player in the world, John Rahm. Just looking at the way it's going to fold, there's six English players on the team, actually, the half the team English. I would think Tommy Fleetwood and Tyrrell Hatton, who went out with Lowry and Rahm yesterday, will play together. So I don't know, I think we could have what would be two fairly kind of fiery in your face characters. John Rahm loves a good celebration. Shane Lowry, I think, is going to get into it as well. So I don't know, Rahm and Lowry, that seems quite tasty. I would put it to your own.
Yeah, and is there a sense that, I think, was it yourselves on the show last night, or it might have been even Kenny this morning, was making the point that the Americans are that bit more talented, that maybe Europe have to find an emotional pitch and get to that in order to maybe live with the quote-unquote inferior talent that they're maybe bringing to proceedings, although John Rahm is obviously one of the form players in the world at the moment. But I will bow to your superior knowledge and all that, Joe, but I would agree with your take that a Big Brother lifestyle preamble to this whole thing would cater to casual fans like myself, because the most fascinating thing about the Ryder Cup, of course, is this: it's an individual sport, individual sports people in meshing together and trying to work towards a team collective. And Ian Poulter aside, who seems to revel in the team side of things, I think it is there is a level of discomfort for the players maybe to reconcile themselves to the team play ethic. But I always find that very interesting. And obviously America has their own sort of, is it too strong to call it, toxic dynamics going on within that team? Although they seem to be, publicly at least, giving out the facade that things have been patched over. But I think from my point of view, it'll be the personalities that'll be drawing me in, probably more so than the difficulty of the course and that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, no, it's always the personalities, to be fair. We'll go for complicated over toxic. I don't know if it's always as bad as people say. Like, they're often losing, so obviously any team that loses, things get a bit ragged, whereas winning solves everything. You know, we see that in every sport. So it's hard when you're losing to be best mates as you're heading to the press conference on a Sunday. Team Europe. Does the media, and it's incessant. So I was watching it when I went home last night, and every day, like, Harrington and Stricker and all the players have to do loads of media, and nothing has happened. You know, they've practiced and done nothing for a few hours, and then it's like media question. So yesterday there was a lot of focus on Harrington, who borrowed from the Lions, whereby he's given all the European players a number, a la the Lions, where you get your number, where you come in order. So they're all very blown away by the fact that there have only been 164 players for Team Europe in history. And, you know, I've seen McElroy do interviews, Poulter, obviously they've been told these stats, then Harrington came out and repeated them all. So, like, they all know, well, there have been 500 people in space, 5,000 people have climbed Everest, there have only been 164 who've played Ryder Cup for Europe. So they've all got now numbers on their gear and on their bags, and that's the big thing for Team Europe yesterday. Whereas the big thing for Team USA, Richie, was a video of Brooks Koepka walking over to Bryson DeChambeau on the practice range, having, I would say, a lukewarm, tepid conversation for all of 25 seconds, turning around, walking away, Bryson turning to the crowd and saying, see, we're friends. And that was the offering from Team USA yesterday. I would say unconvincing. I wouldn't say they're brothers just yet.
Yeah, I want to see them do a duet of Ivory and Ivory, a reworking of the McCartney and Stevie Wonder classic from 1982, to really seal this week for us. But yeah, like, they're going to be the story. And the fact that DeChambeau yesterday, I'm not even going to say hinted, he outright said that they're going to be playing together at some stage during the week is going to be box office stuff. And it's going to make for the entertainment of it. And whatever about the 164 players and this being a greater pinnacle of human achievement than going into space or climbing Everest, the entertainment factor of all this trumps any kind of quality of golf. So you want to see stuff like that, I guess, over the kind of nip and tuck.
Do you know what though? Sorry to jump in, because you had me very excited with that clip last night of Bryson saying, look, there's something cool coming up. And my first thought last night when I saw the video was, I really hope that Bryson was not talking about this really crappy video here. But then a reporter was doing a piece to camera and said he'd asked him, you know, God, when's this? What is this amazing, exciting thing you've got planned? And Bryson's response was, it will happen before the end of the year, not week, end of the year. So there's nothing sure. They're doing some Phil versus Tiger ripoff pay-per-view gimmick. That's what they're doing. That's 100% what it is.
Don't give it for free.
There'd be nothing more disappointing than if this beef was buried in the name of commerce. Because Froch and Groves, and I think you might recall how toxic their sort of rivalry was as they fought at Wembley Stadium, and basically the Wembley fight, boxing hadn't been in a stadium in years, and that fight was built on the strength of the animosity between the two. And now they're away doing after dinner speaking together as a pair. Like, oh, we hated each other then, but we're chums now. So I don't want to see that happening, Joe.
Well, with the two when boys. He said, it's, you're going to find out before the end of the paused year as opposed to week, I just thought, oh, for God's sake.
Do you know what? There was an article, I think it was in the New York Times, in the lead up to Trump being elected in America, which said everything now is pro wrestling. Like everything in terms of spectacle and build and grudges and all that kind of thing is framed exactly in the same way, perhaps unintentionally, but definitely in the same way that pro wrestling has been for decades. And I think the DeChambeau Koepka feud absolutely fits that bill.
Mm. So that's Ryder Cup, a new Golf Weekly podcast coming your way tomorrow. You can find us on patreon.com. Just go in there and search for Golf Weekly and subscribe. $3.99 a month plus VAT, and loads of content coming your way there over the next couple of days, as you might imagine. Kerry have, I guess this coaching ticket, potential coaching ticket, we can call this star-studded.
Yeah, just a bit. Stephen Stack, the Killarney Legion manager, has assembled a star-studded coaching ticket in his attempts to become the next Kerry football manager. His potential assistants include Mickey Ned O'Sullivan, Donny Buckley, Seamus Moynihan, Dara O'Kaneja, and Aidan O'Mahony. Outgoing manager Peter Keane, of course, remains in the frame, as does the former Kerry and Kildare manager Jack O'Connor.
I mean, that catches the eye, Ronan.
Yeah, it's absolutely loaded, and it seems, I suppose, any by dint of the legacy and heritage of the county, any management team is going to be fairly stacked, but this one takes it to a whole new level. So I think I don't think people quite saw this coming in terms of the Peter Keane succession plan. I know he's still very much in the mix, but it's going to make for a lot of intrigue in this in-between period between, I know the club championship's in the throes of it now, but as we try and fill ourselves with the county goodness, I think that's sort of going to be the main ones the next few weeks.
Now, very sad news. I think this just broke today. There was an interview in the Telegraph. Joe Kinnear, Richie.
Yeah, the family of the former Republic of Ireland international has revealed that he's suffering from dementia. The ex-Wimbledon manager was first diagnosed in 2015, his wife Bonnie told the Telegraph today, and she says his condition has since deteriorated. The 74-year-old won 26 Ireland caps and was a UEFA Cup and FA Cup winner with Tottenham during his playing days.
I don't know if you're in the spot. I just, because I was doing different pieces and we'll chat more about it with Dan McDonald, I just half read the article. I'll read it properly in advance of the football show, but I think, you know, some of the signs where they noticed he was suddenly very aggressive, and they said, well, geez, that's not the Joe Kinnear we know. And they were some of the early warning signs.
Yeah, she says that his moods would change and would change pretty quickly and in ways that weren't, you know, regular to his regular behaviour, conducive to his regular behaviour. It's just a sad situation, because I think a lot of people have actually begun to wonder in the last couple of years, where had Joe Kinnear gone? Because, you know, still just 74, a huge character in the game and somebody whose personality kind of leapt off the screen and leapt off any interview that he did, particularly at Wimbledon, I guess, will remember most fondly. But, like, it's just a terrible thing. And she, obviously enough, has asked in this interview, she's raising awareness. She's not just telling Joe's story. She's essentially saying that more needs to be done from a footballing perspective to ensure that players are protected against head injuries and that the game is made safe for players of the future. Because she says, and she points out, that like there was insurance against breakages and against serious injuries, but there was nothing to cover essentially the deterioration of one's mental capacities because of, you know, playing football. And unfortunately, there have been so many of these these cases over the last 2-3 years that have arisen. Nobby Stiles, Bobby Charlton, Jack Charlton, the three most high profile. Obviously, Jeff Astle, in terms of getting awareness going, his daughter has done the most work. But these stories aren't going to stop. We're going to see so many of that generation and beyond whose latter years are severely compromised purely because they play football. And that's a genuine shame.
Yeah, because he was last in management at Newcastle 08-09, and that was a very fraught period, I think, and didn't go well from memory. I'm just trying to jog memories now.
It was thankless because I think it was the initial days of the Mike Ashley reign, and things were pretty fraught, and they were going through 2-3 managers a year, and the Lee Charnley situation had come up, and they're just trying to get somebody to steady the ship, and he was just doing somebody a favour, it seemed, in trying to get things right there. So I don't think it was fair. He hadn't been involved directly in football management for a couple of years by that stage anyway, so it was never going to be a great position for him to be in. But yeah, for this to happen and to, I guess, take away his memories of his playing days, which were fantastic, and he was a great servant to the Republic of Ireland when we needed him, it's just so sad.
No, it's dreadful. It is dreadful. He was director of football at Newcastle 2013-14, and as you're saying, he was diagnosed probably not long after that. So, still very young at 74, and he's diagnosed in 2015. So that's the news on Joe Kinnear this evening. Now we'll go to Karen Duggan. She's been talking about Ireland's performance last night.
Yeah, she was assessing the performance last night. A 3-2 victory over Australia, of course, at Tallaght Stadium. Karen Duggan believes people shouldn't get carried away with last night's result. The victory did end a 7-game losing streak for Vera Pauw's side, and against a team ranked 22 places above them in the world. But Duggan told this morning's OTB AM that one area of the Ireland team needs addressing.
I think that there's an element of that, maybe the goalkeeping situation isn't as strong as it has been previously, but it's not helped by the fact that we've chopped and changed almost every game over all of the friendlies. It seems like someone makes a mistake, you take them out, you give someone else a go, someone has a good game, it's not enough, they change it again. There's Courtney and Grace have been chopping in and out, and I think that's kind of led to some of the uncertainties in the back line as well. We've spoken about their inconsistencies in the past. It's due to personnel, it's due to shape, and the goalkeeper is a big part of that. They're the first, like the people who marshal your defence, and the goalkeeper situation needs to be sorted. They need to pick a number one. It's not like the debate we have with the men's team where there's 2-3 guys who are going out there and having flawless performances every game. It's the fact that every game we're seeing mistakes from the goalkeeper. I think we just need to pick one and back her.
Yeah, it's that's difficult though to do that. Like, say for instance last night Courtney Brosnan, I'm not sure you could just pick her and back her on the basis of last night's performance. Like, the goal conceded just wasn't good enough, few other mistakes. So like, I don't know, really, in good conscience, as you head into Sweden and Finland, would you just say, well, I'm just going to back you and see how it goes? You know, you have to go with who you think is the best option. Grace Maloney, I think, was ill for last night, so it wasn't an option.
Yeah, I don't think our goalkeeping options have been that great. I know Vera Pauw is actually, like we saw with Lucy Gwynn last night, she was parachuted straight into the side. She's making the most use of the granny rule that she can now to bring players on board. There have been a few have come on board in the last year, but we need a top class goalkeeper. I think it's one area of the team that has been crying out for somebody. No disrespect to anybody that's been between the posts for the last couple of years, but it definitely cost us over in Ukraine about 18 months ago, almost cost us again last night in a friendly that, you know, was a friendly, but Ireland needed to win that game for numerous reasons. But I think Aaron's right. It's a case of picking the right pony, but I don't know if we necessarily have a massive stable to choose from.
Yeah, that's where you'd have sympathy for the manager, you know. Yeah. It's easy to say pick one, but then you've got to look at the performance and say, well, if it's not good enough, we might have to try change. And as you said, you run out of options. So it's just one of those tricky situations. You can't go out and buy a new player, unfortunately, at international level. So we'll see. Those games next month, Sweden, Finland, get the qualification campaign underway. And well, after the last one, you'd say there's a bit of pressure on Vera Pauw to deliver certainly a playoff place. Where are we going next?
To Derby. They have been docked 12 points, having formally gone into administration. An application was made on Friday with the Championship Club saying its finances had been badly hit by the pandemic. Wayne Rooney's team is currently home to Republic of Ireland players Jason Knight, Festi Ebiseli and Louis Watson. The administrators say their priority is to find a new buyer and to ensure Derby can fulfil their fixtures this season. They're now bottom of the Championship table on -2 points.
Derry City?
yet they have condemned the racist abuse sustained by their striker Junior earlier this week. The 27-year-old scored Derry's second in Monday night's 3-3 draw with Bohemians at Dalyman Park. However, Derry say that the online abuse did not come from Bo's fans.
Okay, and James Rodriguez, who arrived and made a real impact at Everton and looked like he was set to be a big success, he's kind of come and gone and now he's drifting away.
Yeah, he swapped one footballing stronghold for another. Everton confirming that James has completed a move to Qatari team Al Rayyan for an undisclosed fee. The club is managed by Laurent Blanc. The Colombia international playmaker travelled to the Middle East at the weekend with the transfer window in the region still open until the end of this month. He made 26 appearances during his 12 months at the Premier League club. But as you kind of alluded to there, most of them were front-loaded towards the start of last season. And he tailed off very badly towards the end.
Because when he first arrived, he was great, Ro.
Yeah, and I think most people hold that fondness for his sublime World Cup showing in Brazil, I think it was, and kind of hope, willing him almost to succeed in the Premier League, and he was brilliant for those first few weeks. And I was going to say the same of Wayne Rooney at Derby. Never seemed like a perfect fit, but I suppose Ancelotti was the conduit there, you know, the previous relationship, and he did actually hit the ground running. But once Benitez set his stall out and said it was never going to work, he had to look for passage. Yeah, I'm kind of a little bit disappointed that he hasn't followed, say, the Radamel Falcao route and gone back to La Liga with a lesser club and maybe tried to reignite his career that way. But I'm sure we'll be seeing him in Colombian colours at the top level for a few more years.
Ronan, this Connacht Ulster match. So this is going to be, is this the first unrestricted match? Is this like a little marker as we hopefully leave COVID behind us?
Yeah, they're nipping under the kind of, I guess, in Indiana Jones respective, nipping under the door. The interprovincial meeting of Connacht and Ulster in the United Rugby Championship has been moved to the Aviva Stadium. The game is going to be played on October 23rd. It was due to be at the Sports Ground, but there now is the possibility of a capacity crowd attending the game at the Lansdowne Road venue, because October 22nd, you might remember, is when our Freedom Day, I guess you'd say, is supposed to be.
Yeah, the United Rugby Championship. Excitement levels, thoughts on this? Obviously, we've had Celtic League, Pro 12, 14, 16, a little bit of Rainbow Cup thrown in. This is the latest version.
Badged it, you fool.
Say again.
It's old Alan Partridge line, they've rebadged it, you fool. It's hard to say.
It's complicated, by the way.
It's complicated, which helps nobody.
No, it's back to, because I spent a while this afternoon in advance talking to Matt, trying to just get my head around how it all works. And I don't know, there's a certain point where for a competition to really work and grab imagination, you want to be able to watch games at a glance, know what they mean and why.
Yeah, it needs to be simple. It needs to be simple. That's why the Champions League in a couple of years' time is going to piss off so many people, because everything is moving towards the Swiss model. The Champions Cup in rugby is doing the same thing again this season, and it's just not enjoyable.
No.
You want to see everybody with the chance to play everybody else, and every game have the same amount of meaning, and not for games to be played in pods and other people kept at arm's length, and then you qualify for this or you might go through to that. It's just unnecessarily fiddly just to squeeze the most out of media rights, which is all these things are ever going to do. They're content. They're no longer competitions. They're content for broadcasters. They're content to be sold for, you know, £1 billion a pop, and they're suffering in terms of their viewability because of that.
Yeah. And there's obviously the South African teams. A big upgrade on the Southern Kings and the Cheetahs, we're hoping. So in the first round, you'll have Leinster taking on the Bulls, who just won the Currie Cup, Munster against the Sharks. Now, the Springboks are all still obviously on international duty. Even just the rhythm of the season is now so different as we kind of get our heads around how it looks post-COVID. So the South Africans will still be on international duty right up until October 2nd. By the way, they've been in a bubble since the Lions tour. I mean, I just don't know how their heads are not melted, but they'll be still on international duty until October 2nd. Presumably they need a break. November internationals, there are no United Rugby Championship games right through November. And then European games start in December. There's no October European games. Then you have the Interbros at Christmas. You have a bit of January before Six Nations starts, before you kind of get a sense of everybody locked, loaded, fully stocked. So I don't know. I think this could be a difficult enough first year to get a sense of the pecking order and how it's all working out. Don't know, Ro, are you chomping at the bit for this?
I don't know, you both raised good points there about the viability of like introducing, I don't want to call them meaningless matches, but matches that don't have the same sort of jeopardy or meaning in them. And it's such a physical game where, you know, it's going to become a player welfare issue at a certain point where we're basically trotting players out for games that aren't, you know, necessary. And even from a viewer's point of view, you want that sense that what you're watching actually counts towards something. And it's something that probably puts a lot of people off the NBA, for example. And that's, while not as physical, there is an athletic imperative on it, and it can be quite draining for the players across the long season. But there's games that go by, swathes of seasons, where just teams know that they're going to make the postseason regardless, and I think that's going to be the case here. So the one saving grace is that maybe the European competition doesn't kick in, so maybe these competitions, domestic, can get a bit of momentum behind them, and maybe that will bode well for the future.
We shall see. Richie McCormack, thank you.
Pleasure, lads.
Ronan Mullen, thanks. We get to Tony Evans, this week is European Week of Sport, aims to promote sport and physical activity in all countries across Europe, and this week is for everyone regardless of age, background or fitness level. The aim is to inspire Europeans to hashtag be active on a regular basis. To celebrate, we're giving away a €100 Sport Ireland Campus voucher every night this week. All our nightly winners also go into the draw for our end of week prize. That's a family coaching session with former Olympians at the Sport Ireland Campus and a tour of the facility. You'll get to do an athletic session and can jump off the 10 metre diving board if you're feeling brave. You can also help yourself to a €500 voucher for the sports campus. So to be in with a chance of winning, just tell us which Irish sprinter won a gold medal at the under-20s European Championships earlier this summer. So which Irish sprinter won a gold medal at the European Championships under-20s earlier this summer? Your name and answer to 53106 for 30 cents and we'll call you back after the show. We mentioned the safe standing is coming into Premier League and Championship from January 1st this season. Tony Evans is going to join us next.
The News Round on Off The Ball.
With Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
This is News Talk.